Welcome to Booked. This week, we're at the Ilka Literature Festival, where they're having a special Bronte celebration, and Booked has joined in the fun by dressing up as Bronte characters. I'm playing the ruggedly moody and tousled Heathcliff, and this is a small poem about a lesser-known Bronte. I like Angela Bronte best. The lost Bronte sister. Wrote for Mills and Boone her best-selling title when the vicar kissed her under an Ilkley moon. Angela Bronte, forgotten sibling. Emily often told her off for dribbling. So, striding across the moors in big wellies and leather jerkins, the regulars Mark Thomas and Roger McGough. And riding side saddle in long frocks and bonnets are Dilly Keen and performance poet Rory Motion. So, let's wipe the mud from our boots, chuck a couple of logs on the fire, pour a drink and sink the first round. Each panellist will find in front of them a pack of cards. Each card has written upon it the name of a fictional servant. All the panellists have to do is describe what's written on the card to their teammate. Once their partner's guessed it, they swap over and move to the next card. And you've only got 1 minute. So, Roger and Mark.
Oh, this is Sherlock Holmes' servant.
Oh, Mrs. What's her name?
Mrs. A river in Canada.
River in Canada?
Oh. The bay. A bay in Canada.
Hudson.
Yes,
Hudson.
Yes.
I knew that. This is a bloke on an island and finds footprints in the
Friday.
Sand.
Yeah. Friday. This is the butler. Oh, God, say that, can I? I guess I can. The butler in Batman.
Alfred.
Good, yeah.
This is Umbrella 30 seconds. And Dick Van Dyke really liked her.
Oh, I know. That lady.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yes, Mary Poppins. This is P.G. Woodhouse.
But Gridgy.
Hey, that's Mark, you know. Put them down.
Shakespeare,
yes, William Shakespeare.
The Moor. The writer. And the Moor.
In the Lear. The
Moor. No, not Lear.
Othello.
No, the servant in
Othello servant.
Yeah. So what's he called?
Oi, time's up. You, come here.
Time's up. Who was it?
Iago.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
Iago.
That's almost like an order, that name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Iago.
Pint of Iago. Yeah.
Right, Dilly and Rory beat that sterling effort.
Right, she's in a Shakespeare play about the quality of mercy not being strained. And she is the handmaid to Portia. Can I say Portia?
Yes.
I retract it.
You can say anyway, Ford.
Mrs.
Yes.
Hudson.
Yes, Nerissa.
All right. This is in the biggest love story that Shakespeare ever wrote. And,
the nurse.
Yeah, right.
30 seconds.
This says a little man on a donkey who went round with a big guy who...
Sanchez. Don Quixote. Sancho Pablo.
Sancho Panza, yes.
Sancho Panza, right, okay.
15 seconds.
This is a really malformed little bloke in a very stormy thing that Shakespeare wrote.
Oh, is it what...
it was...
Caliban. Oh, golly, stormy thing. Yes, and... she went to work...
I loved her. I really fancied her. Somewhat cruel when I was a kid.
She went to work for the
Von Trapp family,
yes,
yeah.
And what are we going to do?
Well, it's Mary Poppins in another dress, isn't it?
Time's up.
What are we going to do
She was as pure as Doris Day, but I can't remember her name. She was a nun, wasn't she, for a while?
Yes.
Maria.
Thank you.
Maria. Let's move forward now and forget the past. This is the round we call the front end and the back end of the banana, or beginnings and endings. In this round, our panel beaters are asked to weld new beginnings and endings onto well-known works of literature. For those of you playing at home, remember to look away or wear a mask if the glow of the wit becomes too bright. So, Roger, which book have you rewritten?
Well, I was given William McGonagall, you know, the Tay Bridge disaster. Famous because it's so bad, I think, although it's people find it... delightful, like Spike Milligan, a great fan of McGonagall. This is the famous Tay Bridge disaster. The first verse is his, then I've taken up. Beautiful railway bridge o'er the silvery Tay. Alas, I am very sorry to say that 90 lives have been taken away on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which shall be remembered for a very long time. 90 McGonagall fans all on their way to an arts centre near Inverere, where the poet was to read that very next day. And so wildly enthusiastic were they, that they recited his poems aloud on the train, on the bridge, or the River Tay. But the rhymes were so lumpen, and the rhythm so dumpety-dumpen, that each iron girder and rafter shook with uncontrollable laughter. And the bridge quivered and shivered, and catastrophe, it collapsed and fell into the silvery Tay. With an almighty gloosh, the train disappears, taking with it 90 pairs of cloth ears. It must have been an awful sight to witness in the dusky moonlight. But luckily for Scottish literature, Mr. McGonagall was safely home in bed. Otherwise, he would surely be dead, and this poem unwritten and consequently unread.
And Dilly, what's your new start and finish?
Love Lifts the Curse by Barbara Cartland. No explanations. Pink, cried the Honourable Squirinthietta Snatchful impulsively, her large emerald eyes glinting impishly with delight. I shall wear pink at Queen Charlotte's ball on Saturday. Her aunt, Lady Barbarella de Carthorse, sighed indulgently in a fresh paragraph. Because, as everyone knows, no lady can possibly read, let alone write a paragraph with more than one sentence in it. Leaping to a third paragraph within seconds of starting the book, Lady Carthorse looked at her favourite niece, who was practising the gavotte. My dear Squirinthietta, new paragraph, you do remind me so of your dear dead mother, for she was just as artless as you are. Oh, said Squirinthietta, her face clouding over in yet another minty fresh paragraph, do tell me how I am like Mama, Aunt Barbarella. Well, said her aunt, new para, she was tall and slender, just as you are, and she had your strange affinity with the seat of a horse. Double space. Was it true, said Squirinthietta, that she had a perfectly formed derriere and absolutely marvellous frontal globes which glowed like peaches by candlelight and drove men wild with mounting desire and... Oh, that paragraph ended in three dots, as so many would in this interminably brief novel. Pressing on to the ninth paragraph, Lady Barbarella smiled as she noted Squirinthietta's obvious care in avoiding any vulgar words like bosom or bottom, and she patted herself on the back for having brought the orphaned girl up well. Obviously, she didn't actually pat herself on the back because her basque was rather too tight. We will let that rest. Squirinthietta paused. But why, ... she cried, why was I called Squirinthietta? And a tear dropped onto the quivering youthful melons that burst provocatively from the restraining laces and the constricting whalebone, thus proving that a corset is no place to store fruit. Because you are of noble blood, and you cannot be called any old name like Dimpfner or Gartnett, said the elderly aristocrat wisely. And besides, I always give my heroines lovely makey-uppy names. Why, my next heroine is to be called Chipalapalooza, and she will be a beautiful Indian princess who marries the Earl of Bugaboys. I am dictating it to my secretary even now, in between sips of ginseng and wasp's whittle. However, as to the suggestion that you might wear pink at Queen Charlotte's ball, continued Lady Barbarella, it is out of the question. You will wear white, which is the only appropriate colour for a virgin. Squirinthietta was about to ask what a virgin was, when a loyal and bent retainer, only too grateful for a life of serving the aristocracy, announced the arrival of an important visitor. Lord Gordon of Brown, he intoned. And Squirinthietta shivered with fear as she realized that she was about to meet the most notorious man in all of London, the man who had scandalized society by remaining a bachelor into his late 40s and by wearing a lounge suit at the Mansion House. ...68,492 paragraphs later, the book draws to a gripping close. Gordon of Brown found Squirinthietta wandering eight paragraphs from the end. A kind I'd find you here, he said, his cheap tie flapping in the breeze. Lord Gordon, blushed Squirinthietta hesitantly. Or do I call you Mr. Gordon of Brown now? Aye, lassie, said the blunt Scotsman in a paragraph choked with emotion. The House of Lairds is nae mair. Squirinthietta thought that her heart would burst with happiness, and she felt the stirrings of rapture beating within her. Suddenly, she realized she was in new labor and needed medical assistance very quickly. But, what about your old love, Princess Elizabeth of Romania? Gasped Squirinthietta in the antepenultimate paragraph. Princess Elizabeth of Romania means not to me, hen. 'Tis you and only you, my wee sleek Squirinthietta, that I love. He clasped her to him, and she felt the welcome rub of his Burton suit against her cheek. Love had overcome them, and love, thrilling, blinding love, took them up, soaring beyond the clouds, up to a transport of bliss, out in the stratosphere, where they were locked with other lovers for all eternity in an ocean of joy and ecstasy that transcended all and bound them together in ceaseless blessedness and adoration, and united them in passion, and the fire of true ardor burned in their hearts in one great seamless stream of consciousness paragasm. In other words, he gave her one.
And now it's time for Vox Pops. In this round, we let the public whisper in our ears to bring in their recollections of classic texts. What our panellists have to do is guess which book they're describing. So, Rory and Dilly, what's the book behind the dribble for you?
It's a kind of fairy story.
The perversions are surprisingly compelling.
Victorian setting.
An aristocratic man who has an affection for
opium smoking, whose face does not betray any of the evil deeds that he does.
There's drugs.
A musical singer.
Aristocratic settings.
Homosexual, almost pedophilia.
The central image of the book.
This absolute obsession with appearance.
It's a very moral story.
All the time is changing, although we don't realise that.
The author himself specifically did not want the book to be moral.
Well, I'm not going to let my kids read it anyway.
I think...
Opium smoking, perversion, fairy stories.
And a face that didn't change, and appearance,
well,
it's Dorian Gray.
A face that didn't change, that's Dorian Gray, isn't it? Yeah.
Dorian Gray, it certainly is. And for an extra 500 points, who's it by?
He's not big in Ilkley.
Ah, isn't
he? Oscar?
Oscar.
We
Oscar.
Don't have his short round here.
Oscar quite wild.
So, Roger and Mark, see if you can get this.
The plot, which looks ridiculous, probably seemed far more credible when it was first put upon the stage.
It's
ominous, but at the same time peculiar.
It's
kind of condense huge ideas like the seven deadly sins.
It's about
playing tricks on world leaders and figures of authority.
It
goes between being sensationalistic and serious.
It's about a seeker after truth
who was dissatisfied with
wrestling with questions of mortality and being a flippant man with desires.
The limits of his trade.
It's a warning, really, that you shouldn't
basically kiss.
He was dragged screaming from the edge.
The author came to a rather mysterious end.
But you can't help feeling sorry for him.
Uh-huh. Oh. I'm going to have a... what's the name?
Yes.
Faust.
Faust.
Faust. Mephistopheles and all that lot.
Yeah.
Dr. Yeah?
Faustus.
Dr. Faustus, yes.
What drew you to that, then?
Seven Deadly Sins, for me, was the one that... The sins, a big idea. And it's also because they play tricks on world leaders and all that kind of stuff. And when he's got all the power from the devil, he goes down and starts pranking. He's a bit of a prankster. He's old, the Doctor.
Certainly is. Well done. This next round is a bit like those weird dreams you have where strange but possible things happen. You know, where you find yourself walking through Harrods naked except for a bobble hat, then suddenly you find yourself in the middle of the Namib Desert dressed as King Henry VIII, an ordinary night in Barnsley. Yes, this is the round we call Jump in the Plot. In it, characters from one novel wander into a famous scene from another novel or book. So, Rory, who sleepwalked into what for you?
Mike TV, off Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, the TV freak. He's walked into Bruce Chatwin's On the Black Hill, which is about two old Welsh twins who live a very, very slow life in a wet Welsh valley. Okay. Right. Wearing his waistcoat made of old lino, Benjamin Jones watched the endless rain. Every 3 or 4 years, the clouds broke and columns of brown corduroy light slattered onto the withering grass. The only time he had left the county was when he went with his twin brother Lewis to sell beasts at an auction in Coombe Dancing. And there they had seen men with shoes. That morning, he was listening to the farming broadcast as the cat contentedly licked the remains of some lamb's prolapsed uterus from his frayed linen forearms. Benjamin Jones was 86, and he'd never had a Wonka Whipple scrumptious fudge mallow delight.
Hi!
Hello, who are you?
I'm Mike TV, and I've just been atomized by Willy Wonka's magic chocolate TV machine, and I've been whizzing disembodied and formless through the ether, hoping that when my subatomic particles reaggregate, I'm going to be in a TV program.
What's that you're eating?
It's a Wonka Whipple scrumptious fudge mallow delight. Do you want some?
Oh, don't mind if I do. Although normally for breakfast, I just have a porcelain bowl of dead pine needles.
No, I've never heard of that. I only eat things I've seen advertised on TV. I like Willy Wonka's luminous snozzwangler, strawberry, invisible caramels, and those wriggle-in-your-tummy radioactive coconut rainbow toffee apples.
Oh, if I fancy something sweet, I generally chew on a short length of wind-battered blackthorn root.
Did you see those advertised on TV?
No, we haven't got one. If I feel like watching TV, I wait for Lewis to get in a mood, and then I watch the irises of his eyes cloud into different densities of grey.
Wow! You haven't got a TV! What do you do for entertainment?
Oh, we read the floral tributes from the Hereford Times. We watch rowan berries thrashing in the gale. And if the weather's really good, we go out into the field and play finger-flick football with rabbit droppings.
Wow! Is that your idea of full-on max entertainment?
No, no, no. Every 10 days or so, we try to have a close relative dying pointlessly in an upstairs room. And then we see how long we can go without expressing any appropriate emotion.
Wow! You must have the most boring life in the world!
Now, it's funny you should say that. I've always been content with my simple life here in the farm with Lewis, but since eating that chocolate, I suddenly feel rather hyperactive and vaguely dissatisfied.
That'll be the E numbers kicking in. Brilliant, aren't they?
They're not bad at all. I don't suppose you've got one of those luminous snozzwangler strawberry invisible caramels, have you?
Sure.
Do you know, I'm really beginning to dig how cool this Willy Wonka gear is. I don't suppose you know where I could score some, do you?
Oh, but we'd have to go to England.
No problem. You start the tractor and I'll put on my fetid, crinkling oilskins and we'll be off right away.
What about Lewis?
Oh, bugger Lewis. I'm bored to bloody death of him. I never want to see him again, or this farmhouse, or this valley, or the rain-lashed church that broods over the small village of Llandrover 4 Wheel Drive.
So, Mark, who are your plot swappers?
My plot swappers? One of them's a rather obscure character from... Well, no, relatively obscure character from literature. And that's Roberta Muldoon, who's in The World According to Garp, and becomes a radical feminist and works with Garp's mother in a women's refuge. And she has jumped plot and ended up in The Godfather. And the scene that they've jumped into is the scene where all the mafia families get together to try and stop the war. And in this, Roger will be Don Corleone.
Putting the tissues into my... Well, right, okay.
To get the full-on Marlon Brando.
Don't use Eisel.
What? What?
Dilly is going to be Roberta. Rory is Tony. And I'm Don Tattaglia.
We're here to discuss how we might resolve our differences and end the war between our families. Our business has been devastated. Money from prostitution, gambling, union records is dropped as our soldiers fight and kill each other. Don Tattaglia, you have lost a son and I have lost a son. We are equal. Here we must find a way to end this war. The woman next to me is Roberta. She has been helping me find ways for our families to solve our problem.
Don Corleone. Have you been eating paper again? Don Corleone. I have over 100 men who are already drenched in the blood of our feud. On my word, they will kill and maim and destroy your family. We are ready to cut open your chest and hurl your still pumping heart into the faces of your children and your grandchildren. And with you, you bring a woman?
Oh, who missed their anger management group this morning?
You dare to laugh at me? You know, I could blow your brains out right here and now. I could blow your rancid brains out, and then maybe you just learn some respect, huh?
Oh, this is exactly the problem we face. Pride, ego-driven conflict. Don Zataglio, we need to explore the possibilities of running a non-macho mafia.
Don Corleone, you insult me with this puta. You get rid of her, and you get rid of her right now.
Don Zataglio. I won't take you first. That is your name, then. Don Zataglio. I want to thank you, first of all, for sharing so honestly your emotions with the group. And I wish in no way to criticize you. But this anger seems to be focusing on a woman. Or maybe this indicates some fear or instability a woman on your part. Would you like to respond to that suggestion?
If you do find it hard to respond, it might help to try and contact our first memories of woman love. Let's try and remember our mothers.
Don't you mention my mother. God rest her soul, she was a saint. She was perfect. Don't you ever disgrace her name with your dirty lips.
Oh, you Italians, you still think your mothers are virgins. It's so classic. Okay, let's move away from your mother. Let me ask you a direct question, Don Zataglio. Does my vagina frighten you?
Hey, Tony, you got your knife with you? You just give me the knife, huh?
Sure.
Lady, do you know what I'm going to do with this?
You're not going to do anything with that thinly veiled penis substitute. You're going to put it down on the table and talk.
Yeah?
Yeah. And you know why? Because I got a bigger phallic substitute pointing at you from under the table. And mine has two barrels.
Tony, you want to look under the table and tell me what you see?
Hey, it's very big.
Don't you think it's time we all talked?
Yeah, maybe you're right. Okay, this ain't solving nothing yet.
Don Corleone, I think you have a suggestion, a non-violent offer that you might want to make to Don Zataglio.
Yeah. I got a bottle of candy, some chocolates, and a video copy of When Harry Meets Sally. I thought maybe we could, you know, watch a movie, drink the wine, shed some tears together, maybe find a bond between us.
Hey, Tony, what do you think?
Hey, it's a good film.
What chocolates you got?
Ferrero Rocher?
Hey, Don Corleone, you are spoiling us.
Now, imagine the sound of book. A gentle riffle as you turn the pages, a light thud as you place it down on the table, an almost imperceptible sigh as you put it back on the shelf. Yes, the wonderful sound of book. Now, imagine the sound of story. In this round, our panellists have played the sounds of story, and they have to work out which book they describe. So, Dilly and Rory, listen to this.
Last night, I dreamed. I went...
Well?
Yes.
Singing on a rural farm?
Yes, the Beatles.
Here comes the sun. Yeah, George Harrison. And then more running water.
Yes.
And then more animals.
More animals mooing, horses.
It's very therapeutic. I don't know what it was.
It was lovely. Oh. I could be massaged to that.
I think the Here Comes the Sun was kind of a hint.
Was it?
Is it all about drought?
No.
Sons and lovers?
No.
Sons and daughters?
No. There was a farm, wasn't there?
There was a farm.
And there was a Here Comes the Sun. And there was a farm.
Oh, MacDonald had a farm.
And what about the beginning bit that was from a different book?
Last night, I had a dream.
Yes, and what was that book from?
That's Rebecca.
Aye. Rebecca? Farm.
Sunnyside Farm. Rebecca of Sunnyside Farm.
Almost Sunnyside, but not quite.
Sunnybrook.
Sunnybrook.
The audience have helped a great deal. Yes. Thank you very much indeed.
So it's Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm.
Right.
Well done. Right, well, how's this one, Roger and Mark?
Romans go home is an order, so you must use the...
Yeah, kind of.
Which is... An
I think the first noise you heard there should give you the biggest clue.
It's a monkey?
Kind of, yes. But it's a particular kind of monkey.
Is it a rhesus monkey? No, it's not.
No.
It's one of them whooping monkeys.
Mm. Goodbye, Mr. Chimps.
What was the crashing? Sound like a volcano at the end.
It was crashing rather than a volcano. It was actually something falling down.
Falling down, falling idle or something.
Yeah. A bigger thing than that, falling down, preceded by some exact monkeys.
Monkeys and... Monkeys.
Gibbons. Oh, Gibbons, decline and fall of the Roman Empire.
Exactly, Roger McCall. Yep, they were gibbons.
I can't believe that. I was on the Jungle Book.
It's got a similar plot. So there.
Yeah.
And now to our final round, a round in which inappropriate things slip out of literary mouths. We call this round Least Likely to Say. Imagine the protagonist of Ilkley Mobartat saying, I'm just going to buy a very nice new balaclava. So, you've got to tell us some things that literary characters are least likely to say. Dillian Rory.
Okay, Arnie Sacknewson in Journey to the Centre of the Earth. This is the last time I travel on the Northern Line. The Duke of Gloucester out of King Lear. I suppose that's one way of removing contact lenses.
I've got one. This is Sleeping Beauty. No, it's not actually. Snow White. Snow White, least likely to say, how come you seven dwarfs own a diamond mine but can't afford a cleaner? And the other one for Snow White is Dopey, Grumpy and Sneezy. These aren't drug-related names, are they?
Dilly, have you got a least likely to?
Cinderella. Do you have these in a 6.5?
I've got a quickie here. This is David from David and Goliath. And he's least likely to say... I'm the greatest. I'm the best thing that's ever been. He's going to go down in round three. You just got to hang out and watch with me because I'm going to whoop him so bad like a bee sting because he may be big, but I got a sling.
Any more, very quickly.
Hunter S. Thompson in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Do you do decaffeinated?
Well, it's time to finish now with a short poem about Angela Bronte, the previously mentioned undiscovered Bronte. Angela Bronte, Angela Bronte, why has history forgotten you? Angela Bronte, Angela Bronte, why have you been overlooked? Angela Bronte, Angela Bronte, obscure carrot in the Bronte stew. Angela Bronte, Angela Bronte, now you're rescued, thanks to Booked. So, it just remains for me to thank Mark Thomas, Roger McGough, Dilly Keane and Rory Motion. Was researched by Felicity Goodall, devised and produced in Bristol by Mark Yelps, and presented by me, Ian McMillan. Goodbye.